Illinois Public Media News, this is 217 Today. I'm Kimberly Schofield. It's Tuesday, July 29th. Coming up, a Chicago migrant recently deported to Venezuela says conditions in detention are inhumane. That story in just a few minutes, but first, these headlines. The Champaign County Fair Queen Pageant isn't just a beauty competition. For the two most recent winners, it's about being ambassadors for the fair itself and for the farming communities they call home. IPM Student Newsroom's Sam Rink has more.
Sophia Hartke didn't expect to win the Champaign County Fair Queen Pageant on her first attempt.
I kind of did it as a side quest, and it turned out really good.
The fair wrapped up on Saturday, and now she says she's excited for what's to come. Hartke, who grew up in Sydney, has ties to Central Illinois' agricultural communities. She has 10 years of experience in 4-H, and she served in many leadership positions at Unity High School's Future Farmers of America chapter. She also helps her grandfather, the president of the Effingham County Fair Board, prepare for his fair every year.
Maybe when you think of a county fair, you just think of the rides or, you know, the grandstand events, but I think it's very important for people to get in touch with where their food comes from.
Her Champaign County Fair Queen predecessor shares that sentiment.
So many people don't realize how agriculture touches them in their day-to-day.
Olivia Scheich won the pageant last year, and she plans to pursue a career in agricultural economics and policy. To her, being the queen was an opportunity to help connect people from both rural and urban areas.
Farmers want to be able to feed the world. They want to make sure that the environment's going to last for generations to come. And so I think when you realize at the end of the day, we all have the same goals, it just kind of helps you work together more.
I'm Sam Rink, IPM News.
The rise of artificial intelligence is driving demand for data centers in states like Texas, Iowa, and Wisconsin. But those buildings need large amounts of power and water to operate. In West Des Moines, Microsoft's 5 data center campuses used more than 68 million gallons of water last year. Keith Schilling is the state geologist of Iowa. He says some data centers around Des Moines are tapping into deep aquifers that are thousands of years old.
All water lost to this deep aquifer is lost forever in human terms. So in other areas where we have shallow water, plentiful water, data centers are perfectly appropriate.
He says it's not a risk yet, but state policymakers need to strategically plan for future water use. Doctors and nurse practitioners across Illinois are stepping up to provide gender-affirming care for minors as hospitals scale back. Kristen Schorsch reports from Chicago.
Dr. Jessica Lipinski specializes in gender-affirming care in the western suburbs. She says panicked parents have been calling since the University of Chicago Medical Center suddenly stopped treating trans youth earlier this month.
I used to work with orphanages in Poland. And that kind of work, seeing that these kids were ignored and forgotten, kind of really propelled me to say that every single member of our society deserves respect.
Lipinski doesn't take government health insurance. She owns her practice and charges a monthly membership fee. So she's not under as much pressure as hospitals. Their funding could be cut by the Trump administration for providing gender-affirming care.
That was Kristen Schorsch reporting. Hospitals across the Midwest are bracing for cuts to services and staff in the wake of President Donald Trump's budget bill. Side Effects Public Media's Ben Thorpe reports that's because the budget will impact a special tax on hospitals.
The federal changes specifically reduce how much states can tax hospitals over time through what's called a provider tax. That tax has been used to draw down more federal dollars for the state Medicaid program. David Dunkel is the CEO of Johnson Memorial Health in Franklin, Indiana. He says it's just one way the federal government is cutting funds for rural hospitals.
That's less money coming to Indiana. That's what that results in. So again, being asked to do more with less is just going to put more strain. And if you're a hospital right now that is struggling, there's no relief in sight.
The provider tax reductions will be phased in starting in 2028. I'm Ben Thorpe.
Still to come, a Chicago migrant recently deported to Venezuela says conditions in detention centers are inhumane. That story's coming up next on 217 Today, but first, meteorologist Andrew Pritchard with your forecast.
I'm meteorologist Andrew Pritchard with your IPM News forecast for Champaign-Urbana. Today, look for mostly sunny skies with a high of 93 degrees and a northeast wind 5 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low of 73 degrees, south wind 5 miles per hour. Tomorrow, partly cloudy with a chance of thunderstorms and a high of 90 degrees, southeast wind 5 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a chance of thunderstorms and a low of 67 degrees, west wind 5 miles per hour. And for Thursday, cloudy and cooler with a chance of showers and a high of 75 degrees and a northeast wind 5 to 15 miles per hour.
Next time on The 21st Show, a bill that would ban carbon sequestration beneath sole source aquifers passed the General Assembly with overwhelming bipartisan support. But some scientists say the approaches needed to tackle climate change and risks to water sources are minimal. We'll talk about carbon sequestration, what it is, and hear why people are concerned about potential risks to the water supply. That's next time on The 21st Show. Join us. You're listening to 217 Today. I'm Kimberly Schofield. Since President Trump took office, we've been hearing a lot about federal agents arresting immigrants outside schools, on their way to work, or after appointments in immigration court. But we don't have many firsthand accounts about what happens next. Adriana Cardona-McGeegod with public radio station WBEZ brings us the story of one Chicago asylum seeker during his time in detention.
¿Cómo has estado? ¿Cómo estás? ¿Acabaste de llegar a tu casa?
Sí, el día de ayer.
Marcos was in ICE custody for nearly 3 months. I tracked him down after he got deported back to Venezuela in June. He agreed to tell me what happened in detention.
Okay, bueno,
He's calling from his mom's house in Caracas. His wife, Maria, is also on the call with their two-year-old.
Papi!
Hola, mi corazón. Mi vida.
She's connecting from their Southside Chicago apartment, where the couple was starting to build a life since they arrived in 2023. They have two other kids, 6 and 9. WBC is not using their full names to protect them from retaliation. Marcos was arrested this spring by ICE agents after he dropped his kids off outside their school. On his way out, federal agents surrounded his car and told him they had an immigration arrest order. Marcos says the agents never said why they were arresting him. He was confused. He and his wife had been following immigration law. They were applying for asylum, had work permits and driver's licenses. Marcos says many thoughts ran through his head at that moment. His kids inside the school, his journey to the U.S., and how excited he and his wife were after buying a car just the day before. Marcos says the agents then took him to a Walmart parking lot. There, he says they handcuffed him and shackled him. Then they took pictures as if he had been arrested there. Marcos didn't understand what was going on. But immigration officials had been sharing photos of detained immigrants on social media. They are often accused of having criminal records. That morning was the beginning of a three-month odyssey. ICE kept trying to brand Marcos as a criminal. He says he endured terrible conditions at several detention facilities. At his first stop, a processing center in Illinois, he says he was questioned as if he had ties to gangs, which he denied. He was asked about his tattoos. Marco says one is of the Atlantic Ocean, another one is a rosary. There is also a tattoo of his kid's name. He says, just because I'm from Venezuela, it doesn't mean I belong to a gang. Then he says federal agents started hunting for evidence to suggest he was breaking the law. They unlocked his phone and questioned him about transactions in his bank account. I told them I'm a DJ. I work as an Uber driver, he says. I used to work at a McDonald's. Marcos insisted, I've never been arrested in the U.S. I've never had a DUI. I thought you were only deporting criminals. He told them he had followed the rules all along. He waited in Mexico for an appointment with immigration before entering the U.S. to start his asylum application. But he says the agents only ramped up the pressure. Marcos was told if he didn't cooperate, he would be sent to this notorious prison in El Salvador, where hundreds of immigrants have been deported since Trump took office. That threat followed him from detention center to detention center. For nearly 3 months, they zigzagged him across the Midwest, the South, and the Southwest. He says he was locked up in 10 different facilities. Transferred in vehicles that look like cars to transport dogs. His hands and feet always shackled. Marcos found legal help with the Chicago-based National Immigrant Justice Center. His attorney says locating him between transfers and communicating with ICE was extremely hard. The conditions were brutal. He says they made him sleep on metal benches with the lights on the whole night in Missouri. He sat on a bus all day in shackles, not knowing where he would be taken next. He didn't have enough to eat. He was in pain without medicine. Then, about 2 months into his detention, Marcos' asylum application was denied. He lost all hope of seeing his wife and 3 children anytime soon. ICE had what it needed to deport him. From then on, his biggest fear was being framed as a criminal. In one Texas detention facility, officials called me and another young man saying that immigration had sent a message, that we were with El Tren de Aragua. That's a criminal gang that originated in Venezuela and that Trump says is invading the U.S. Marcos says he was forced to wear a red jumpsuit, the kind they typically put on violent offenders. He remembers being told by a guard, I should fear you. But to Marcos, this made no sense. He had no criminal record in the U.S., and he says he has no arrest records elsewhere. He was an asylum seeker who held multiple jobs in Chicago to support his young family, and now he was labeled a violent criminal. Marcos says the worst part was the toll on his mental health. There was the loneliness, the uncertainty, the inability to speak with his family for days, sometimes weeks. And if he talked back, he says he could be thrown in solitary confinement. He heard about a Venezuelan man who died by suicide in one of these detention centers. WBC couldn't confirm this, but news reports and advocates say deaths and health emergencies in detention centers have increased this year. I asked ICE and the Department of Justice why Marcos was arrested. Did they have any criminal evidence against him? No answer. The Department of Homeland Security says any claims about poor conditions are false. They say all detainees are provided with proper meals and medical care. Marcos was finally deported back to Venezuela last month. Federal agents never pinned a crime on him. Marcos is free. He and his wife, Maria, are relieved and video chat daily. But the family is separated. And Maria is alone in Chicago with 3 children, afraid and unemployed. In the apartment, the couple once thought would be the start of their American dream. Adriana Cardona Magigad, WBEZ News.
Tomorrow, we'll hear how Marcos' wife, Maria, struggled after he was arrested as she tries to make ends meet alone in Chicago with 3 small children. That's it for today. 2 and 7 Today is produced by Stephanie Oriana. Reporting today contributed by Sam Brink, Joe Schultz, Kristen Schorsch, Ben Thorpe, and Adriana Cardona Magigad. Music by the Kilbourne Alley Blues Band. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. I'm Kimberly Schofield. 2 and 7 Today is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.